Hello and welcome back, and thanks for listening. This is Techonomics, and I'm Jason Middleton. For this segment, we're going to jump back into my discussion with Clive Thompson about his new book, Coders, The Making of a New Tribe and Remaking of the World. Clive is also a writer for Wired Magazine and the New York Times. The podcast has the extended version of this interview, by the way, but this one is still kind of long-ish, so let's dive back in, starting with AI. Artificial intelligence, is that where we have an inflection point when it comes to coders and how they code? I'm thinking weapons of mass destruction again.
Sure, yeah. I mean, here's the funny thing about modern AI, this quote-unquote deep learning style, where instead of writing the rules, you know, where like if this happens, then that happens, like that old style of AI where you try and predict everything the system might have to decide on, the new style, the deep learning style, is where you sort of just train the system and it learns on its own. Mm-hmm. Like you take, if you wanted to recognize cars, then you take a million pictures of cars of different models and you feed that data into a neural net. And every time it gets it right, you reward it. Every time it gets it wrong, you punish it. And after, you know, a million photos, it can now sort of with 99%, 98% reliability, correctly predict the model of car, right? So that's how you do it. It's training.
Okay.
Now, this is actually a weird form of activity that not a lot of coders like, because they kind of, a lot of them got into the field because they like the idea of making something that's like an elegant watch work. You know, it does exactly what you tell it to every time. This is more like, you know, training a puppy, you know, to not pee on the carpet. And so it requires and rewards a certain different type of person. Also someone that's interested in gathering huge amounts of data together, you know, and whatnot. But is this an inflection point? So yes, it is. And here's why. That form of coding, that form of software is becoming increasingly important for everyday life because AI is being woven into more and more products.
Mm-hmm.
As a way to help those products make quick decisions, you know, ranging from, front doorbells that recognize a face and let someone into a house based on whether or not they do face recognition, you know, or mortgage products. Should we give this person a mortgage? You know, we've trained it on past mortgages, who paid back, who didn't. Do I, Clive Thompson, coming forward, seem like a person that is likely to pay my mortgage back, right? So you're getting a lot of automated decisions being made by AI because they can do it at the speed of computers. They can do it fast and quick and over and over and over again without tiring. So this to me is very interesting. I think, you know, if you've spoken to Kathy about weapons of mass destruction, then your listeners may know that there's some dragons in those waters,
yeah.
Right? You know,
yeah.
If you train a neural net on bad data or biased data or incomplete data, it's going to make bad, biased, and incomplete decisions. You know, great example. A while ago, someone was working on training a automatically recommend jobs to job candidates, right? So it takes, you know, so they take all this past data of who got what job. And what they discover is that when they train this AI, it's recommending higher paying jobs to men and lower paying jobs to women. Because, of course, that's the pattern it learned from the past. That is a historical pattern. Women have been paid less than men. But that, of course, is a product of a whole bunch of crazy sexist ideas that are unjust and which society should be moving away from.
Right.
If you use an AI that can't make moral judgments, that just pattern matches, all you're going to do is replicate the biases of the past.
Wow. Speaking with Clive Thompson, tech journalist at Wired, also the author of the new book, fascinating new book, Coders, The Making of a New Tribe and the Remaking of the World. Let's talk about this new tribe, right? You just mentioned right there, moral judgment in coding for artificial intelligence. AI does not do moral judgment. Do we have a diversity of opinion at the coder level when it comes to this? Because I worry, and I think you do too, about this being a male-dominated space. You mentioned it in story one in your book, actually. Are we seeing enough diversity of opinions in the decision-making so far?
No. For a lot of sort of consumer-focused software, the stuff that people use every day, because the industry is about three-quarters guys, there's comparatively fewer women at the table. It's also primarily white, with a significant minority of Asian, but a very, 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 very small single digits, African American, Latino. And so anyone who had studied the Harvard Business Review could tell you that that anytime you have a team, you know, making decisions, building things, that are kind of a monoculture, you know, they're going to have a bit of tunnel vision. They're not going to understand and predict things that their customers or users who are not like them are going to encounter. You know, for example, and I heard a lot of this the early days of the social networks. It was a bunch of young guys doing it, and they had a lot of great ideas. You know, they created these tools that are genuinely fun and delightful and bring all sorts of new information into our lives. But they, you know, being young guys, they were not really subject to a lot of serial harassment online. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't happen to them very much. You know, I'm a guy, I'm online. You simply don't get harassed at the level that women do. My female colleagues do. So, you know, so they were not time to think, hey, in the beginning, let's set up a culture and let's set up some code that helps limit the ability of people to use our tool for harassment and for some nefarious purposes. So that's a classic example of companies. Those companies all, I mean, they're sort of trying to figure it out now, but they really let the ball of harassment sort of tumble into this very large downward rolling snowball for 5 or 6 or 7 years before they started to grapple with it. And that's just tunnel vision there. And it's big things like that. It's even little things like, you know, in the very early days of the iPhones, like step tracker. It didn't work very well when it was in women's purses because it had just been tested mostly on guys putting it in their pockets. And, you know, lo and behold, most women don't keep their phones in their pockets, partly because women's pants have terrible pockets, right? You know, you can't put anything inside them. So you get these funny, you know, oblivious decisions made up and down the design corridor when you have a narrow group of people making the decisions.
I remember back real-time tracking, location tracking for women was an issue, too, that had to be addressed. And you're right, they are making we're seeing some incremental gains with, you know, the diversity reports and a little more transparency, but it's on you and I to and all of us to report on this to really keep our foot on the pedal when it comes to it. I'm wondering, did you have an opportunity to uncover something surprising in your research for the book?
Sure. I mean, there's a lot of surprising things. Partly, I think, you know, one of the things I tried to do with this book was to say, okay, so, you know, what's kind of the personality profile, the psychological profile, or the traits that make someone, you know, thrive at coding, really love it, in fact. Just having known coders over the years, known developers, know the people that get obsessed with this. You know, I had some idea of the things I would find. You know, I've generally found that people I talk to they're good logical thinkers, and breaking problems down into little steps. You have to think that way to be a coder. They're very meticulous. You know, they're very detail oriented. And again, you have to be like that to program, because if you issue the wrong instructions, things don't work. The one thing that surprised me that was kind of funny, and so funny that I devoted a whole chapter to it, was that they are gluttons or punishment. They have the thickest skin for failure and for frustration that I think I've ever seen in almost any job.
Right.
And that's because, you know, most of us think of coding as you sit down and you're typing away and the code's flowing out of you, you know, the way you'd see like hackers on, you know, TV shows and movies. But in reality, coding is this very slow, painstaking process, because every time you write a few lines, every time you sort of create a new function or something like that, very often it just doesn't work when you try to get it running. You've made some mistake. Could be something small, like, you know, your comma's in the wrong place. It could be something more complicated, like the function you're making is interacting in a weird and unpredicted way with some other part of the software. Either way, 99% of the time, what you're working on isn't working. It's busted. And the computer is not helping you out at all. The computer is being a completely terrible, awful, abusive workmate. It's just sitting there with its arm crossed going, nope, you're stupid, you're wrong, it's not working, I'm not going to tell you why, right? And so coders, like, they it's like they're Sisyphus just rolling this boulder up the hill, and it rolls back over them, rolling up the hill, rolls back over them. It is really amazing. It's actually one thing that I sort of came to admire very much in understanding what coders go through. As some told me, it gives me some clues as to sometimes how bullheaded they can be. You know, when they have a solution, some software, a way they want to change the world, they'll just charge over anything to get it in place, right? Because they're accustomed to like having to like pound nails into the floor with their forehead.
Clive Thompson, journalist at Wired, author of the new book Coders, The Making of a New Tribe and the Remaking of the World. The flow state discussion we just had right there, your answer to that. In the book, it reminds me there's positivity in the book. There's also some cautionary tales in the book. That's why it's such a strong read. Clive, thanks a lot for your time this morning, and keep up the great work.
Thank you very much. I had a good time.
That was Clive Thompson, a journalist at Wired and the New York Times, whose new book is Coders, The Making of a New Tribe and the Remaking of the World. For links to the book and other Clive-centric resources, please check the podcast or the show notes that live online at KGORadio.com. And that podcast is basically everywhere you look for podcasts. Just search Techonomics. For executive producer Lee Hammer, I'm the host and the writer, Jason Middleton. Our thanks to Clive for his time and to you for yours and for listening. This has been Techonomics. Have great weeks, everybody.